Mini episode 1647 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with my fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway. We're breaking down all the NFL divisions, previewing them for 2023. Go back to our first one that we did on the AFC East if you want to hear our overarching thoughts for the offseason and the season as a whole. And what we're doing now is we're getting into each of the divisions individually here now that we've gotten that out of the way. Tight focus on each of the divisions, and in this case, it is the NFC South, which, again, I happen to think is going to be a comedically and historically poor division. I'll give you thoughts to that effect here shortly. Now, this comes from Fantasy Football Draftology 2023, available on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. There's a segment in there, one run-on sentence for each team in the NFL, and these are our run-on sentences for the NFC South. Atlanta. Somebody has to win one of the worst divisions of all time, and paradoxically, it seems probable that it will be the team with the third most unsettled quarterback situation, an unimpressive wide receiving room, and some real defensive holes. Carolina. If Bryce Young can be the real deal right off the bat, maybe the Panthers can win the shootouts that will be foisted upon them by their defense, as unlikely as that may very well be. New Orleans. Because the Saints have fewer holes offensively than the rest of the division, this has fooled many observers into thinking that they are a better team than they are, when in fact the offensive talent looks like a house of cards, and the defense appears poised to have problems at the front and the back. Tampa Bay, year one post-Brady, is going to be as ugly as the 2022 Rams season, as issues that were covered up by winning spring to the surface, and a host of talent canyons on both sides of the ball threaten to make Baker Mayfield's season even worse than 2021. I'm sure you got a little PTSD from that last line there, Chris Galloway, and agree or disagree with me that this is going to be a historic dumpster fire, the likes of which we haven't seen in professional sports in quite a while.
It's going to be a bad division. It's probable that the winner is below 500. And to your point, it's one of these teams has to rise up enough just to find a way to seize it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I will tell you, I'm going to agree with you on the Falcons. I'm going to have the Falcons winning it at 8-9.
Okay.
And, you know, they've got a shoddy quarterback. I'm not going to say shoddy. That's mean.
It's accurate.
Unproven, untested, you know, a guy who had an okay college career. And I got to tell you, like, if I'm Atlanta, like, you're going to win just enough to be, you know, 8-9 and win the division. And it's like, so you'll go to the playoffs, but it's like, Desmond Ridder is not the guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to think to myself, God, Arthur Smith is a good coach. You've got some nice pieces. You've improved on the defensive end, on the defensive side a little bit through the draft and free agency. You know, you boldly went and took Bijan Robinson in the first round, like high, like whoa.
Right.
So you're going to run the ball a ton again this year. They'll be somewhat successful by you know, zagging when everyone else is zigging, but that has a ceiling to it. I don't see them being good enough to do anything but, you know, be below 500 and win the division, because again, like you said, somebody has to. But you kind of wonder, like, there are parts and pieces of this team that, my God, if they just ran out, you know, the worst quarterback they could and finished 2 wins and then go get Caleb, now you plug Caleb names onto this roster next year. How do you feel about it?
Right.
I feel like they might be missing an opportunity, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, great. You're going to have the 12th pick in the draft or something, right?
Yeah.
You're not getting the quarterback. You know what I mean? So I just feel like, are you potentially sucking yourself into mediocrity for the next few years?
Yeah.
They might be falling into that. But let's not worry about the next few years. I'm going to have them at 8-9, winning the division, narrowly beating out the 7-10 Saints.
Okay.
I'm with you. There's some parts of this that I go, ooh, these guys could be good. And then I look at the holes and I go, and I look at the coaching and I go, I don't know.
Right.
Do I believe in this team? And the answer is I don't.
Right.
I'm going to say 7-10. And then I'm going to say, I'm going to give the Panthers, 5 wins. I get it. I mean, look, Colin Cowherd picked the Panthers to win the division and go to the playoffs. I was like, what?
Of course he did.
They don't have a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like, Bryce Young may end up being pretty good, but they got holes on the defense. They're significant holes. And a brand new young quarterback who may be good, but again, young quarterbacks don't win a lot typically.
Right.
Like, I can see where the Panthers are going, what they're trying to do. I just think it's going to be a rough year for them. I just got them winning 5, and then I've got the Buccaneers at 4 wins.
They're going to be awful.
I think they're going to be terrible, yeah. They have pieces still left over on that roster.
But they're like straight
pieces. They have a solid secondary.
Yeah.
They've got Lavonte David. They've got Devin White. They've got Mike Evans. Chris Godwin. They're back. I mean, but Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask are hot garbage.
Right.
That O-line is going to suffer. The running game I don't believe in. And that's a team where you're going to have veterans who are used to winning.
Yep.
And they're not going to be winning.
Yep.
And I think that locker room is going to get ugly. Ugly. And I think that creates a death spiral for them, finishing with 4 wins. And look, that'll put them in the top 5 with a chance to get one of these quarterbacks.
It will.
You know, that might get you May out of North Carolina. That may give you the ability, one lousy season, and thanks Todd Bowles for your contribution. You're fired. And let's go hire, Jim Harbaugh. And after he's done in Michigan, because he's done with the NCAA and he wants out.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, we've got the 4th pick and we're taking May at quarterback and we're going to hire a new coach and we're going to turn this whole thing over. That's how I see this thing going for the Buccaneers.
It very well could. I've got the Falcons at 7 wins, everyone else at 6 wins. I think it's going to be a very, very bad division, but I think it's going to go down to the very end. The other thing is, and you kind of referenced this too, as far as Robinson going to the Falcons and choosing to go in that direction rather than taking a quarterback, which they desperately need. But again, they don't want to admit that Ritter's not their guy yet. But I'm looking at this like Arthur Smith. We keep hearing all this stuff about what an offensive genius the man is. And all I can think with them making the pick is that Arthur Smith is the kind of man who must give you a confused look like a dog does when you use the phrase 8 in the box to him.
I think Arthur Smith is a good coach.
Okay.
And I think he's making the most out of what he's got on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think he made a conscientious decision that if I've got Ritter and I'm running a run-heavy scheme,
mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's a first-round pick. I'm going to take the best running back. And I'm going to run with what I got, right?
Okay.
No pun intended.
Sure.
You know, this is what I got. Ritter's my guy. I'm stuck with him. And we're going to be a run-heavy team. Then I better get the best damn guy in the back of the backfield.
Right.
He's playing for now. I don't blame him, right? You're
right.
Running a system based on the talent you got. You're somewhat disadvantaged. So, you know, hey, run. You double down and go all in on it, right? And that's what he's doing.
Yeah. Oh, you know what's funny? And this is from my background with covering construction, procurement, and the like. You use the term disadvantage there. I could just see them trying to be like, well, we're a disadvantaged enterprise. Sir, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to get any federal grants. That's not what that's there for.
Exactly right. I just think that's where the Falcons are right now. And so I think he just made that decision. You know, yeah. I got Ritter for another year. So if I want to win some games and try to win the division in what is a bad division, what's the point of me of taking the best right tackle? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's not helping me win this year. But oddly enough, this running back might.
Right.
So I'm going to take this guy, even though it goes against all NFL current convention of drafting a running back that high,
yeah.
Bolster my backfield, make some free agency, just try to help my defense, and try to win that way with what I got. And see if maybe, just maybe, somehow, Desmond Ridder proves himself to be a serviceable quarterback or not.
What's funny is, you know, when you look at it in terms of Bijan Robinson, this is where one draft kind of tends to follow the other one, right? Because you probably got to go back to 2018. I know we don't spend a ton of time in these segments talking about fantasy because we're talking about the on-field implications. But Bijan Robinson, he seems to be the highest ranked, as far as on a consensus basis, fantasy running back since who? Saquon Barkley in 2018, who went, the second pick in the draft to the Giants? So it's one of those things where the Fantasy Hawks seem to be following the NFL draft here as far as if a guy goes that high, whether it be a conviction that the investment that the team is making must be that substantial or whatever the case may be, seeing a running back go that high in the actual NFL draft is trickling down to fantasy drafts. And this is a thing where, again, I have felt for many years like it is utterly stupid to say, oh, no running back is worth that point. Like, look, if anybody would have known with a crystal ball the kind of career that Nick Chubb is having, for example, you mean to tell me he shouldn't be a top five, top ten guy just because he's a running back? So that's where this one-size-fits-all thing is a bunch of crap. Even if we're looking at the Falcons and saying they might have had more glaring needs elsewhere, and it's not like they had a bad running game to begin with, but the whole thing of, like, no running back is worth the eighth pick is nothing, anti-intellectualism at its worst.
Well, I generally agree with that. It always comes down to wins over replacement, right, when it comes to running backs.
Yeah.
And so that's the argument against Nick Chubb or somebody at the five slot, right?
Right.
You go, well, yes, is Nick Chubb the talent wise, would you be in trouble if you picked him in the fifth pick in the draft? No. But also, hey, by the way, if you took, this running back, you took Dalvin Cook, 31st, would you have been better off trading back and getting more? It's just wins over replacement. I mean, that's what hurts running backs ultimately.
Yes.
And again, I think Arthur Smith said, don't care.
Right.
This is the guy that's going to help me win with what I have on the table in 2023.
Right.
And so that's all I'm going to care about. I'm going to get a running back that I think can help me do what I want to do on offense because he's that good. We've graded him that high. He's going to help me. Of all the picks I can make in that slot, he's the one that I believe will help me the most with what I have be successful in 2023. That's what drove that pick.
Very possibly. And I'll tell you this, and this is going to depend on looking situation by situation, which of the coaches end up having the amount of buy-in from ownership. I'm not sure that anybody does on this. If anybody would, I think very possibly that in Carolina that might be the case for the first-year head coach. But that being said, their ownership, let's face it, has been very unstable since taking over there. Everybody else in the division, the coaches seem to be in a win-now kind of a mode here. So I'm not sure that anybody will. But if I'm right about this, that everybody's going to be hovering right around 6 or 7 wins, and I actually don't believe there are going to be too many teams in the league doing worse than 6 wins this year. Again, as I referenced in a previous segment, it can't be an 8-8 league anymore, but it may be a little bit closer to an 8-8-1 league than we saw last year. That the whole kind of a calculus of you might be better off of, if you have a chance to get the 4th, the 5th, the 6th pick in the draft, versus going out, losing 49-0 at home in the first round, that's going to be a very, very interesting calculus for these teams. Again, all these coaches in the end, they're going to want to go for it. I don't think anybody's going to be tempted to tank here because all they're going to be doing is getting a nice draft pick for whoever they're replacing. Royston is at head coach. But that's one of the very interesting dynamics. If I'm right about this, and that this division is as close as it is to the end, and that nobody has a lot of wins.
No, I think in general you're right about that. And, you know, probably realistically only Frank Reich is, you know, totally safe.
Right.
For now.
Right.
I think Arthur Smith, I don't think is on the hot seat yet. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Falcons ownership, Arthur Blank is a patient man in general.
Yeah.
And so I think if Arthur Smith wins the division, even if he, you know, let's say he's 8-9 and wins the division, Arthur Blank will look at that as progress, right? Like,
right.
Okay, we won the division. It was a bad division, but he won it. He got us into the playoffs. Okay, we didn't do anything after the first round, but, you know, we're building something here. You know, but the other two are definitely coaching for their careers right now. I feel bad, you know, for the Tampa coaching staff, right?
Right.
Because they've all got to, you know, they're all looking at the interest rate markets going, man, I'm going to have to sell this house and buy it over in the worst market.
That's right.
I mean, the supply is bad and the interest rates are up.
This yes.
is going to suck. But that's just where they are, man. Todd Bowles is not going to be around. I guarantee, I really strongly feel this is the last year for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. He's going to come back to the NFL.
Okay.
And so he's going to be one of these guys. You know, if you're a team like Tampa ownership, you're trying to put it all back together. I mean, and Harbaugh's out there. I mean, don't you want to make a hire like that? You know, especially with the underachievement and Todd, there's nothing that Todd Bowles can do as a head coach at this team that's going to give you confidence or make you go, that's my guy, I'm sticking with him.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, we're going to see some changes next year for the Bucs. Look, I don't hate on Baker Mayfield. What I realized after 2021, look, he had a really good 2020, especially the second half.
Right.
And we all went, oh, okay, here's our first round pick. Here he is. He's looked good. We got to the playoffs. We got a win in the playoffs. Like, okay. Like, we all were like, yes, you know, Baker is our guy. We bought in. Like, we got to the playoffs. We got a win. We took the Chiefs right to it in the second round. Like, one bad call and one bad defensive play away from knocking off Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs
yep.
in the second round of playoffs. So you're a Browns fan. You're looking at Baker Mayfield. You're like, yes, all right, we finally got our guy.
Right.
And then 2021 occurs.
Well,
and that's when I couldn't understand the fans that were like, still like, you know, he's our guy. What are you talking? And I'm like, he's a career backup. He's going to be a really good career backup. That's when I realized it. Yep. Nope. Halfway through that season, I'm like, nope.
Well,
and so we came out of 20. And so that's where Baker is. Baker's going to start. You know, there'll be a few games that Kyle starts. They'll kind of go back and forth looking for a spark. But the reality is next year, Baker Mayfield will be a $3 million acquisition from somebody to be the backup quarterback somewhere.
Here's the thing.
And if Baker wants it, he can have a long career for the next 15 years being a backup.
That's right. And here's how I look at it, is that you have a situation where ultimately, you get into one of these deals, and I understand people want to believe, like, oh, if this hadn't happened, it's very easy to go butterfly effect here. Anthony Schwartz, your boy, if he hadn't gone alligator arms on that pass there, and Baker hadn't tried to be a hero in game two of the 2021 season, foolishly try to make that tackle, and again, if the idiot coaches hadn't given in to Baker's demands to play the rest of the way here, you know, to look at that like, oh, things would be different. But the thing about a guy like that is, if you have to say that something like this, and this is hard to believe, because we want to believe in these counterintuitive things. If there's a reality where that never happens and Baker thrives and is a successful pro, that I don't think life works this way. And we're starting to get a little existential, but I don't think life works that way. I think it's a thing where something would have happened at some point. A as far as his capacity to deal with that kind of adversity. It was always going to show itself in some way. And we just hadn't gotten to see him deal with that kind of adversity prior to that. It was always going to happen at some point. And I think, I didn't necessarily realize it at the time, but I think it's inevitable that it would have gone that way. It might have just been later down the road.
No, it would have gone that way. What it means is, the only part of that where that anything, the ripple effect would have been this. Coaches should have started Case Keenum. They started Case Keenum, they win a couple extra games to make the playoffs.
Yes.
That's a wild card.
Right.
So, but what happens is, you and I both know this, is that that pushes now into 2022.
Right.
Where Baker's coming back. The Browns, and everybody says, man, Baker had that 2020. Too bad he got hurt last year. But look how good this roster is. Case Keenum got to the playoffs.
Yep. Now,
they won 9 games and got to the playoffs. Like, Stefanski's great. Baker comes into 2022. He would have been just as bad.
Yep.
And it would have delayed by 1 year our realization that Baker, we wouldn't have gone and gotten Watson after 21. We wouldn't have Watson. And we would have gone into this year, moving off of Baker and trying to figure out, you know, where we are. Now, would we have been bad enough last year that we would have gotten a top pick to try to get a quarterback? Because again, we wouldn't have given away all those first rounders for Watson.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where your butterfly effect timeline thing changes.
Right.
But the reality is, to your point, Baker was going to lay an egg at some point. It would have just been 2022.
Agreed.
Because here's the thing. The coaches knew his limitations.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, look, I can be critical as Kevin Stefanski at times, even though I'm a fan of his. The guy got the most out of Baker, right? I mean, he squeezed out of that.
Yes.
You know, he squeezed the most out of Jacoby Brissett last year. And so he might have squeezed enough out of Baker again, but the limitations on the team and the offense would have taken its toll. So,
right.
We are where we are, which is in a post-Baker world, no matter what, in 2023.
Agreed.
We just wouldn't have Deshaun Watson. Who would have as quarterback? I have no idea. But, maybe the Browns make a play for Aaron Rodgers. Who knows, right? What was going to happen was going to happen. Baker's going to start some games. He's going to have a few moments where you go, there's that Baker. And then he's going to have some horrible throws and throw some picks and show his physical limitations on avoiding the rush on a deteriorating line. And, the Buccaneers are going to have a tough season because of that.
Well, Chris, in one throwaway phrase there, you actually just summed up the NFC South this year, giving the translation of que sera, sera. That basically sums up the NFC South.
Will be, will be. That's exactly right.
And
then I think, Baker, a guy, not to make this a segment about a Baker, but it's like, the guy came into the league with a lot of fanfare and a lot of fans and a lot of detractors. And I think that if he's willing to mentally be there, like, again, I mean, he's gonna, Chase Daniel had what? A 14-year career as a backup?
Right.
Colt McCoy is like, how many years has Colt been in the league? 15?
Right.
I mean, he could be Colt McCoy. Occasional starts, when, may have to go play 16 for you in a season. He could make, $5 million a year for the next, dozen years being a backup quarterback. He can have a nice long career, but he's not a starter in this league.
Well, and this is what I didn't expect. Like, I never expected Johnny Manziel to last in the league because I'm not sure, nor Tim Tebow. I didn't see either one of them being around to hold a clipboard. And I kind of look at Mayfield the same way. When it becomes clear that he's locked into that fate, I think he's off to do a reality show or some crap.
Well, that or, I think Baker would actually has an obvious future in broadcasting on both college and or pro games.
Maybe. Could be.
I think Baker is compelling enough of a personality that I could see him doing games and being a studio guy or what. I mean, like, honestly, he's got a career after football, too.
Yeah.
Look, he's articulate. He's witty. He is a known name and commodity, right? So I easily see him being able to go into broadcasting and do some games and, you know, college and then maybe some NFL games and, you know, being a studio guy at ESPN or something on NFL game day or, you know what I mean? He absolutely has a career after, doing that stuff. I think he's got that in it.
I'm going to go on a limb here, and anybody that wants to put down $500 on a bet on this thing here, go for it. Remember me with your winnings when it happens. I think he's going to go to the Ringer and do a podcast with Hugh Jackson. Bet on it.
Yeah, I'm not taking that bet.
You're not taking that bet? Okay. No. Well, I don't think either one of us is taking the bet on anybody.
I think that's right there with him doing a podcast with Tony Gross.
Yes, yes. Oh, the three of them together would be just amazing. And then Mary Kay Cabot to just come in and stir the pot as she always did when he was in town. That would be
there's four people I don't want to listen to.
No. All in one podcast, so it would make it very easy to avoid. But, again, the odds of that happening are the same as the odds of an NFC South team winning a playoff game in the 2023-2024 NFL playoffs. Because essentially in the NFC this year, we have two byes. We have the number one seed, and we have the de facto bye that goes to the number five seed, who will go in and thoroughly thrash the NFC South winner on their own turf. Spoiler alert, I think the one and the five are coming out of the same division. But we'll get to that subsequently. Up next is the NFC West. Thank you, Chris Galloway, and thank you, everybody, for checking out our preview of the NFC South for 2023 on the FBH Lounge.